Richard Conniff is a writer and speaker on human and animal behavior, author of several books including House of Lost Worlds, Natural History of the Rich, and The Species Seekers. He's also a regular contributor to the Smithsonian, National Geographic, and the New York Times. And he spoke with the Cincinnati Zoo's Thane Maynard about his work and his book, Lost Worlds, Dinosaurs, Dynasties, and Story of Life on Earth.
Richard Conniff, welcome to the show.
Nice to be here.
You know, what prompted me to see if you could come on the show or recent op-eds you'd done in the New York Times, which were just terrific, some on illegal poaching in Burma of trees, but also your books as well. Really, you've had a great career. For somebody like me who's interested in natural history, it's been a joy to read your books.
Well, thank you. That's very kind of you.
And you've really had quite a varied career because I know I've read you many times in Smithsonian Magazine, of course, regularly in the New York Times, but I mean, gosh, you also do their opinionators and you do blogs. You're not just a book author, I guess.
No, I have spent a lot of time writing for Smithsonian, National Geographic, and various others. And I've done radio commentary and opinion pieces and pretty much the works, television shows. It's kind of fun to do different things at different times.
I know you probably made a ton of money doing radio.
I'm sure you are as well.
Richard, one of your first books that I so enjoyed about a decade ago when you put out one on human and primate behavior called The Ape in the Corner Office, I'm sure that got rave reviews.
Yeah, that went pretty well. That one and another book along the same lines called The Natural History of the Rich, in which I used primate behavior to understand how we humans behave. And yeah, they were both kind of successful.
And really good. In fact, number of times I've gotten copies of The Ape in the Corner Office to share with zoo staff members to learn a little bit about working with one another, as well as to zoo board members, because it's just such a great enlightening view of the world.
Yeah, most people think it's about social dominance. And really, if you look at the natural world, you'll see that it's about grooming and about cooperation a lot more than about putting other people down. And so the natural world can be a pretty good model for our own behavior.
Absolutely. Now, your latest book comes out soon, and I think chronicles the long history and the collections at the Peabody Museum at Yale. Is that correct?
Yep. It's called House of Lost Worlds, Dinosaurs, Dynasties, and the Story of Life on Earth. And it's been a kind of surprising book to work on because, you know, I didn't at first think one museum would have enough material to engage me, but this particular museum was crucial to the late 19th century discovery of dinosaurs in North America. All the dinosaurs that kids know by heart, Brontosaurus, Triceratops, Stegosaurus, and so on, were discovered by staff at this museum. So there was plenty to begin with, but then, you know, I followed the history through and there was a narrative arc because ultimately in the 1970s, this same museum was responsible for the modern dinosaur revolution and all those things that we know now as Jurassic Park, you know, that kind of idea of dinosaurs as dynamic, fast-moving, even intelligent creatures rather than the plodding kind of monsters that had existed in our imagination in the past. So it was fun to write.
I was fortunate to hear you speak in Chicago a few years ago. There was a National Zoo meeting, and you were the keynote speaker. And in addition to being a writer, you are a very good speaker about natural history and even in the area of conservation. Tell a bit about your thoughts of what it's going to take for you and others to effectively communicate so more people become aware of both the importance of science as well as the importance of conservation of biodiversity.
Do you want to talk about this particular case, the Lumber Liquidators case?
Sure. Yeah, that was amazing, the detail you gave.
Well, this is close to my heart because I really do love wood. I love the smell of sawdust. I love working with wood. And I've done that all my life since I was a small kid. But I've had a problem for the last few years because every time I pick up a piece of anything made of wood, a picture frame in particular, mm-hmm. I'll look on the back and see that it was made in Vietnam and in all these other places where they're just ripping down forests with no thought for the species they contain or the importance of the natural world to the future of that country and of the world at large. So anyway, then I read last month that finally the U.S. government had issued a penalty against one company that was particularly guilty of being involved with illegal logging. The company is well known. It's Lumber Liquidators, mm-hmm. and it was famous for its discount prices. And they were unbelievable discount prices. And it turned out the reason was that they were deliberately going after illegally harvested timber. This was from Siberia, north of Vladivostok. And they were stripping down, they were liquidating a forest that is the only habitat of the last remaining wild Siberian tigers in the world. And they didn't care about that. All they cared about was their bottom line. But this group called the Environmental Investigation Agency, these are people who also, you know, do not make huge amounts of money in the world, but they risk their lives to investigate environmental crime. And they went out to the forests in the Russian Far East, and they followed the illegally harvested wood from the tiger habitat back to the factory where it was being manufactured in China. And they bumped into stacks and stacks and stacks of lumber liquidators' products, which were being slapped together with an overdose of formaldehyde, incidentally, and then sold to American consumers at a huge discount. And so they followed this up. They documented it on video. They were quite thorough, and it eventually led to federal prosecution.
You know, it's a remarkable thing because, as you said, in this case, you're talking about wood products, but so many times I think anybody who's a consumer has maybe gone in a store and looked at something and held it up and said, how could that only be $5? Well, one reason is often the resources weren't really adequately paid for in a sustainable way. It's interesting that this one really caught it up. Like you, I'm a woodworker, and to be honest, I didn't even know that there were oak trees being taken out of Siberia. You know, I've always sort of imagined oak is going to be something grown here in North America.
This is particularly flagrant because it was a type of oak that only grows in Siberia, but Lumber Liquidators was importing it as Mongolian oak grown in Germany. They just simply didn't expect to be caught, I think.
That's just remarkable. But I know your article said that it's had a big impact overall on their both stock price and perhaps the future of the company.
Yeah, they have lost 90% of their value. They lost $2.5 or $7 billion in net value of that company. So those stockholders took a terrible beating. And, you know, worse, the people who bought the product took a beating. So the interesting thing about the case was that the original publicity about the illegal forestry, the illegal logging back in 2013, didn't have much effect at all on the price of the stock. People just shrugged and said, you know, the discount prices are what counts, and they didn't care about the illegal forestry. And the only thing that actually knocked the stock down, and knocked it down good, was publicity about the formaldehyde and the contamination of American homes by this product that is a major irritant and a carcinogen. And so that's the kind of short-sighted thinking that we're dealing with. People just think, is it good for me or is it bad for me? But they don't think, is it good for the world at large or bad for the world at large? And those are the kinds of questions that, you know, all of us need to be asking every day.
Absolutely. And it's interesting. Sometimes people will say, oh, well, you know, long-term thinking or large group thinking is counter to human nature. But through cooperation is a lot of how people made it out of Africa and took over the world. And we're certainly going to have to cooperate in order to survive in the 20th century, 21st century.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the hardest things for us to realize in our own lives is that the lowest possible price is not ever the best deal, or very rarely the best deal for anyone. It worked out really badly for Lumber Liquidators. It worked out really badly for their customers. And it worked out really, really badly for the Siberian tigers in the Russian Far East. So sometimes it just makes sense to pay a little more.
Or as people are doing today with food, with other resources if possible, buy it from as close as you can, and you can have a better eye on what the sustainable parts of it really look like.
You know, that does raise another issue, though, because if there is a crackdown on illegal logging in places like the Russian Far East and in Vietnam and other countries, then there's going to be a lot more demand for timber harvested legally in the United States. So, you know, we have to be alert even to, as you said, to how things are being harvested in this country and our nearby, in our own neighborhoods as well.
Absolutely. Well, Richard Conniff, thanks for taking some time with us. We look forward to your new book, House of Lost Worlds, and I'll look forward to you sometime visiting the Cincinnati Zoo. It'll be fun to spend some time picking your brain on the things you've done over a long career in wild areas and with wildlife.
I'd like that. Thanks so much, Finn.